demographic changes. Whites are the slowest growing demographic in the U.S. and will no longer be a majority of the population by around 2044. Their status will continue to decline as America becomes more multi-ethnic, multiracial, and multi-religious, and the result will be increasing resentment and fear at what lies ahead. The people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th believed they were saving America from this future and felt fully justified in this fight.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities and most importantly the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how the growing strategic partnership between Pakistan and China has caused alarm in Washington. And we shall also look into Nepal's general election results and why it's good news for New Delhi.
Pakistan's growing strategic partnership with all-weather ally China is causing jitters in Washington, especially after Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif's visit to Beijing last month. It comes as the United States seeks to cement its ties with India, a critical regional rival of both Beijing and Islamabad. A recent report by a Washington-based think tank says the U.S. is looking to push Pakistan to change its strategic calculus, which is centered on the country's security environment, while calling for a more nuanced U.S. policy on Pakistan.
Chinese President Xi Jinping told Pakistani Premier Shahbaz Sharif during the latter's visit to Beijing last month that China will continue its fundamental policy of opening up and providing new opportunities to Islamabad and other allies through development projects. Sharif became the first world leader to visit China after the 20th Communist Party of China's Congress concluded, demonstrating the ironclad nature of China-Pakistan relations. Their relationship has lately been defined by a high level of strategic coordination and political mutual trust. Pakistan sees its ties with China as a cornerstone of its foreign policy, while Beijing sees its alliance with Islamabad from a strategic perspective. The strengthening of ties between China and Pakistan has understandably fueled concern in Washington. The U.S. Department of Defense report says China relies on Pakistan to project its military and economic might as Islamabad remains a key Beijing ally. The 2022 China Military Power Report, released last week, examined how China seeks to achieve what it called the National Rejuvenation Objective by 2049 with the help of international partners such as Pakistan. According to the report, China ranks Pakistan as its only all-weather strategic partner and Russia as its only comprehensive strategic partner.
The growing unease in Washington is rooted in China's expanding political, economic, and strategic ties with Pakistan as well as Russia, especially with the phenomenal success of the ambitious China-Pakistan Economic Corridor project and Russia's interest in joining it. The fact that the International Monetary Fund review for releasing the next tranche of funding to Pakistan remains stalled since September due to the U.S. pressure, forcing Islamabad to turn to a friendly country for external financing, also shows deepening cracks in ties between Islamabad and Washington.
Relations between China and Pakistan took shape following the 1962 Sino-Indian border dispute as India became a common strategic concern for both countries. The move to cede the Shaxgam Valley in the disputed Himalayan region of Kashmir to China in 1963 further cemented ties between them, much to the chagrin of New Delhi. Fast forward to 2013, China-Pakistan ties were redefined when President Xi announced the Belt and Road Initiative, a massive infrastructure and investment project whose cornerstone was the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. This came amid growing proximity between New Delhi and Washington. While reports point to the Biden administration's attempt to reset ties with Pakistan, especially after former Pakistani Premier Imran Khan accused Washington of toppling his government, the fact that the International Monetary Fund has stalled the release of the next tranche of funding to the South Asian country, apparently under the U.S. pressure, has left Pakistan in dire need of external funding. Pakistan's finance minister Ishaq Dar on December 2nd said the country expects to secure $3 billion in external financing from a foreign country in 2 weeks. In contrast, China agreed to roll over $4 billion worth of sovereign loans to the South Asian country after Prime Minister Sharif's recent visit to Beijing. A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by Mr. A. Sun Oh. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, the Chinese President Xi Jinping said last month that Prime Minister Sharif's visit to Beijing will provide a new impetus to the all-weather strategic partnership between the two sides. So how significant is this?
Well, the so-called China-Pakistan Economic Corridor is very important economically and strategically to both China and Pakistan. For Pakistan, it means reviving the country's economy, bringing about more development for the country and so on. For China, of course, it would mean China would have another access to the Indian Ocean, for example. So this economic corridor, unfortunately, over the last few years, due to the coronavirus pandemic, it was slowed down. And also sometimes there are, shall we say, political and social instabilities in Pakistan. So that also did not help in terms of bringing this China-Pakistan economic corridor forward. So I think with this visit by Prime Minister Sharif, both the China side and the Pakistan side, they will very much like to revive this China-Pakistan economic corridor.
Sir, why is Pakistan's growing political, economic, and strategic partnership with China causing jitters in Washington?
Well, China and Pakistan's traditional friendship went back a long way. I could remember it went back for at least half a century to the late 1960s and 1970s. Actually, it's very ironic. The U.S.-China resumption of their formal relationship was helped by Pakistan in the early 1970s, when Pakistan was sort of the middle person between China and the U.S. in bringing the two superpowers together. But since then, of course, relationship between Pakistan and U.S., sometimes they are very good, sometimes it's not so good, because sometimes the U.S. would accuse Pakistan of harboring some terrorist elements. But sometimes the U.S. Would assist Pakistan militarily. Now, when the U.S. is not in a better relation with Pakistan for a stretch of time, China, of course, sees that opportunity and, try to fill in the gap. And, for example, this China-Pakistan economic corridor, because it could potentially benefit Pakistan a lot. So the China-Pakistan relationship sometimes becomes quite warm, as with now. Then, of course, the U.S. is not quite happy about that.
Sir, so do you think the unease in Washington is due to China and Russia emerging as new power centers amid the changing world order and also the success of China's Belt and Road Initiative?
Well, the problem with recent U.S. Foreign policy, it's sometimes it is very heavy on the rhetoric, but not so heavy on the action part. For example, China, with its Belt and Road Initiative, they would, roll out a lot of trading relationship, a lot of investments, for example, in countries like Pakistan. The U.S., on the other hand, for example, sometimes they will condemn some activities by Pakistan. Sometimes they promise certain aids to Pakistan, but very often these sort of aids are not actually delivered. So, you know, from Pakistani point of view, and indeed from the point of view of many developing countries, well, the U.S. Doesn't seem to so-called walk its talk, whereas China, typically, they were bringing a lot of investments to these countries. Thereby, I think it is almost inevitable that a lot of these developing countries would find themselves more and more friendly with China and perhaps distancing themselves a little bit from the United States.
So, sir, talking about the United States, it has used the International Monetary Fund as a tool to pressure Islamabad into towing its line. So the question is, should Pakistan be looking elsewhere for external financing?
Well, Pakistan's economy is, frankly speaking, not in the best shape. It has to get assistance from whichever source that it could get its hands on. That would include anything from IMF to hopefully a very generous China. And I think that's part of the reason why Prime Minister Sharif is going to China. He was looking for some delays in paying some of the debts owed to China, or hopefully to get some forgiveness of those debts. I think very often you'll find China to be more generous in doing so, especially to developing countries. On the other hand, IMF, it has a very rigid, very often Western-oriented standards, and it's very difficult for you not to pay back to IMF on time and so on. But if your country is simply not in a condition to do that, then you have to look for sources elsewhere.
Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Government of Pakistan in a tweet said, during his two-day visit to China last month, Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif and Chinese President Xi Jinping discussed broad-based cooperation in economy and investment and exchanged views on regional and global developments. Researcher and writer Sartaj Khan cites a recent Pentagon report as stating that China ranks Pakistan as its only all-weather strategic partner and Russia as its only comprehensive strategic partner. Chinese embassy in Pakistan in a tweet appreciates Islamabad's efforts in making China-Pakistan relations the cornerstone of its foreign policy, adding that the two sides will strengthen communication and cooperation.
You're listening to the Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to the Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Last month, Nepal held elections for the parliament as well as for the provinces, the second vote since the country's constitution was promulgated in 2015. The final result is expected next week, but it appears that no political party will gain the majority in the 275-member house. Odds are in favor of the Nepali Congress-led alliance, which is good news for India. Importantly, the landlocked country situated in the Himalayas has in recent years been the battleground for regional supremacy between New Delhi and Beijing.
The general election in Nepal is being keenly followed by both India and China, the two regional powers. The Himalayan country has, under Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Deoba, shifted more towards New Delhi, sparking concern in Beijing. Thus, from India's perspective, the Deboa-led government is the best possible scenario. The five-party alliance comprises the Nepali Congress led by Deoba, the Communist Party of Nepal Maoist Center, the Communist Party of Nepal Unified Socialist, the Loktantrik Samajwadi Party, and the Rashtriya Janamorcha. Chinese strategists won't be happy with the possible election outcome, considering Beijing's foray into influencing the country's power politics. Over the past decade, the Chinese embassy in Kathmandu played an instrumental role in the merger of Nepal's two frontline communist parties into a single entity, the Nepal Communist Party, which paved the way for the thumping win of the alliance in the 2017 election. China's influence on the communist parties even prompted some to ask whether Beijing was micromanaging the country's power politics. Political pundits say the India-China rivalry to gain leverage in the landlocked country is set to enter a fresh phase when a new government takes charge in Kathmandu. A new turf is ready for the two powers.
The ruling Nepali Congress enjoys deep-rooted ties to India after Sher Bahadur Deoba succeeded KP Sharma Oli as the country's prime minister in 2021. Relations between the two countries not only improved but gained fresh momentum. China and India aren't the only countries with an eye on the Nepal elections. The United States, which has a fierce rivalry with China, is also following the political upheaval. A key strategic ally of New Delhi, Washington seeks to undermine China's Belt and Road Initiative and its Indo-Pacific influence.
After succeeding former Prime Minister Oli, the leader of the Communist Party of Nepal, in what was described as a Game of Thrones in 2021, Deoba embarked on his first visit to India in April 2021. The three-day visit helped resurrect a relationship that had been in the doldrums under the China-backed government in Kathmandu. Even before Oli began his first of the three fleeting terms in October 2015, India and Nepal were at odds over the new constitution that apparently did not include the marginalization concerns of two ethnic groups that live in the region bordering India and constitute 40% of Nepal's population. When Oli was removed from power in his first term, he blamed New Delhi. In 2018, he staged a comeback due to the unification of the communist factions, in which China played a key role. In the second term, India-Nepal relations virtually broke down over the map controversy. With pro-India Deoba in the driver's seat now, the mood in New Delhi is upbeat. The Indo-Pacific policymakers in Washington are also in a celebratory mood, as it will help them further undermine China's Belt and Road Initiative, of which Nepal forms a vital cog.
Now, to talk more on this, we will also be joined by Mr. Goldoni, an analyst and commentator from Hong Kong. But before that, let's continue with Mr. Ae Sun Ho, who has kindly stayed with us. Now, sir, talking about the Nepal elections, a five-party political alliance led by Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Deoba is set to form the new government in Nepal despite the hung parliament. Is that good news for India?
Well, Nepal is a country which situates itself between India and China. And therefore, when these two big regional powers are not quite friendly with each other, then Nepal, it's very often squeezed in between. And Nepalese politics in recent years have been a contest between China on the one hand and India, on the other hand, in terms of influencing which parties or which politicians would come to power. Deoba is, of course, widely perceived to be more pro-India as opposed to his predecessor, Mr. Oli. And therefore, if Deoba were to form the new government, it would, at least for the moment, be seen to be more favorable to India. But of course, because this is, in a sense, a coalition government, and it may not be as stable as if Deoba were forming the government only with his party. So I think what we could see now, it's only India has a temporary upper hand at the moment here.
Now, for the next question, I would like to welcome Mr. Goldoni to the program. Mr. Goldoni, the landlocked country has moved towards India since Duba took office in 2021, antagonizing China. But can the new government afford to ignore Beijing amid shifting geopolitical dynamics?
I can say that the coalition that has gotten power in 2021 has started to move and shift its attention, let's say from China more to India. I believe that in a country where the economic, the GDP is not very high. It's quite small, actually. We are talking about $45 billion. It's very important to have an economy that is open to the most important driving source of growth in Asia. It means China, definitely. And, of course, also India. So I see this one, reorganizing of a priority, a little bit risky for a country as Nepal. As you said, is landlocked, where they have a huge border with Tibet. So I really think that they should be more careful in rearranging the priorities. Now, in this case, I'm talking about economic priorities, and it's quite clear that this priority has been most probably imposed by external means, by external actor.
Back to Mr. Ason Oh again. Sir, why is India so important for Nepal and vice versa in terms of strategic and economic interests?
Well, in a sense, India shares more culturally with Nepal. A number of India's major religions originated from Nepal, such as Buddhism and so on. So traditionally, India would consider Nepal to be one of its, in a sense, a protectorate, even though officially they could not call so. But of course, in recent years, as China's economic muscles grow, it also tried to dabble its hands in terms of growing its influence in Nepal. So that's why you have this, in a sense, tug of war between two regional powers, which manifests itself in the politics of Nepal. Sometimes you would see Nepalese leaders who are more pro-China and sometimes more pro-India. But the traditional leanings of Nepal was indeed with India. It's just that, frankly speaking, India perhaps is not in a position to assist Nepal economically to a large extent. And that's why China could play its important role.
Last but not least, to finish this off, let's go back to Mr. Goldoni. Sir, do you think the United States will step up its Indo-Pacific interventionist games in order to undermine its chief adversary, China, under the Juba government?
I believe that Nepal is a very important geopolitical strategic in a strategic position, very, very important for several reasons. One is regarding the borders, no? Because if we have seen recently, let's say in the last 1 year, where the most friction we have between India and China, all the friction was around the borders from the north of India, and then even to Bhutan, and definitely, because the border with Nepal and Tibet is so long, it will be strategic to try to influence and to control this country. But I will add one more reason why is important. My analysis is the reason is important because the United States are trying to give something to India in order to bring the position to India more close to the United States, especially in confronting the two main problems, the geopolitical problem that now they have. It means Russia and China. And in the past, that India is not so much, as I can say, willing to take part, you know, from in this conflict, potential conflict. But Nepal could be a kind of candies, a kind of pawn that is, given to India in order to, give something and try to bring India on the political side of the United States. I see this one in this point,
On that note, I would like to thank both our guests, Mr. Aysun Oh from Kuala Lumpur and Mr. Fabrizio Goldoni from Hong Kong, for being on the program, and thank you for your precious time and knowledge. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Nepal-based journalist Santosh Gimir says the results of country's general elections are yet to emerge, but it is likely that the dice is loaded in favor of the Nepali Congress-led alliance that is considered close to India. Anil Sigdale, a policy analyst and author, notes the emergence of a new equation in Nepali politics, especially one that carries an anti-American tone, which he says will continue to test American diplomacy in Nepal. Nepal-based academic Upendra Gautam points to foreign interference in Nepal after the general elections, citing reports saying that Indian diplomats are engaged in talks with politicians in the power corridors.
And that was our episode about Pakistan's growing strategic partnership with China and how it's giving jitters to hawks in Washington. And also, Nepal's general election being the good news for India. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
Due to increase in the Zionist regime's crimes against oppressed Palestinians in 2022, the resistant groups and the Palestinian Authority have asked the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The occupying Zionist regime has become so brazen that it regularly slaughters innocent Palestinians quite openly in front of their loved ones. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Middle East Monitor has more for us. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. Hamas released a statement recently marking the Human Rights Day, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. The Palestinian Islamic resistance movement Hamas said the world is making this day as Israeli regime continues to escalate its terror and systematic violations against Palestinians, including deliberate assassinations, land theft, siege and racial discrimination, and segregation. The statement went on to say that The day provides a good opportunity to shed light on the scale and gravity of the unabated Israeli crimes against Palestinians. The Hamas statement added, "It is also a suitable opportunity to remind the whole world of its responsibilities to take actual action to criminalize the occupying regime's violations and colonial settlers' terrorism, work on putting an end to them, and prosecuting their perpetrator as war criminals and international courts of law." The movement further stressed that Israeli crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. Hamas further called on the United Nations and the international community to put an end to Israeli crimes in the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied city of Al-Quds and the West Bank, to end the unjust blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip and enable the Palestinians to defend themselves with all means possible until ending the occupation and establishing an independent Palestinian state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital. Since the start of 2022, the Israeli regime military forces have murdered more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 Palestinian children. According to the United Nations, the number of Palestinians martyred by Israel in the occupied West Bank this year alone is the highest for the past 16 years. Incidents of sabotage and violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians and their property have become almost a daily occurrence throughout the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Wafaa news agency has also covered the same story. Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates Riyad al-Maliki has handed over to the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, a file on the Israeli regime crimes committed against innocent Palestinians. During a meeting at The Hague, the Netherlands, with Karim Khan, the Palestinian Foreign Minister Maliki stressed that the State of Palestine continues to cooperate with the International Criminal Court, the ICC, and the staff of the Prosecutor's Office to submit all documented information that proves that Israeli military and civilian officials have committed serious and continuous crimes against innocent Palestinians. He stressed that all of these crimes fall within the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The top Palestinian diplomat stressed the importance of the ICC and its role in holding war criminals accountable in the light of the rise to power of the extremist cabinet of terrorist settlers who bluntly expressed their schemes that are based on field executions and forcible expulsion of Palestinians. The Palestinian minister said bringing the criminals before international justice will contribute to the protection of the Palestinian people and deter crimes against innocent Palestinians. As well in his remarks, he called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC prosecutor, to pay a visit to Palestine and give priority to the administration of justice. Palestinian human rights advocates last year held a decision by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to affirm its full territorial jurisdiction over the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime is not a member of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, but Palestine was allowed to join back in 2015 and has since called for an investigation into Israeli crimes. The Hague-based court has already opened an investigation into possible war crimes by Israel in both the occupied West Bank and the occupied Gaza Strip. In 2021, the United Nations documented 2,934 grave violations against 1,208 Palestinian children in occupied Palestine and the Gaza Strip. The United Nations Human Rights Council, Human Rights Watch, and other international human rights organizations have charged the Israeli regime with apartheid in the past 2 years. Local and international human rights groups have condemned Israel's excessive use of force and shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians at a time that mainstream media and Western powers turned a blind eye to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime against innocent Palestinians. Many believe the Israeli regime will continue with its crimes against Palestinians as long as it enjoys protection and patronage of the United States. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has more for us. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC, has called on the United Nations to set up a fact-finding mission to probe the recent fatal shootings of a Palestinian youth by Israeli military in the occupied West Bank. In a statement released recently, the Jeddah-based international organization held Israeli authorities fully responsible for this act. For the repercussions of assassinations and premeditated killings of Palestinians by Israeli troops, urging the United Nations and other concerned international bodies to establish a fact-finding mission to investigate circumstances surrounding the martyrdom of the 22-year-old Amar Mefler. It called on the international community, especially the United Nations Security Council, to fulfill its legal and political obligations, pressure the Israeli regime into stopping such criminal acts, holding the occupying Israeli regime accountable for all of its violations and racist policies, and provide international protection for the Palestinian people. Video footage widely circulated on social media sites showed an Israeli soldier holding Mefler in a headlock by a road in the town of Hawara, south of the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, on 2nd of December, as the two men tried to wrestle him away. The man then appears to strike the Israeli soldier before the trooper pulls out a handgun and shoots him several times at point-blank range as the Palestinian youth fell to the ground. Israeli military forces present at the scene prevented residents and ambulances from providing aid to the injured Palestinian youth, provoking clashes with the local population. The Palestinian Ministry of Health said Mefler had attained martyrdom for his critical wounds. The United Nations West Asia envoy, Tor Wennesland, said on Twitter that he was horrified by the latest assassination. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya said at the time that the criminal execution of the town of Hawara reflected the extent of organized racism being practiced by the Israeli military. Mohammad Shataya expressed his utter shock and anger over the heartbreaking video footage of Mefler being fatally shot at point-blank range by an Israeli soldier, saying that Israeli soldiers feel assured that they will not be held accountable for their crimes and atrocities, and this emboldens them to repeat such actions. He also urged the International Criminal Court, the ICC, at The Hague in Netherlands, to quickly hold the perpetrators of this crime to account.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thank you. President Xi hails a new era of relationships with the Persian Gulf state during his meeting with King Salman in his three-day stay at Yamama Palace in Saudi Arabia. The world's largest exporter of crude oil, joined by the world's largest importer of it, signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement that involved the Chinese tech giant Huawei. Huawei is one of the companies that just recently was barred from exporting its equipment to the U.S. because of a recent imports ban in the U.S. on certain high-profile Chinese tech firms, including the likes of ZTE and Hikvision. While this was the most restrictive ban, it is not an isolated ruling. Anti-Chinese rhetoric became mainstream during Donald Trump's presidency when he banned all of Huawei's 5G equipment from the U.S. and even by extension in some EU countries. He also banned U.S. citizens from owning Xiaomi stocks, labeling the company as a communist Chinese military company. Despite the U.S. security officials warning that equipment from Chinese brands such as Huawei in the field of telecommunications can be used to collect sensitive information, most of the 5G infrastructure in the Persian Gulf states is built, at least with the partial assistance from Huawei. With all the hassle that the U.S. has been causing these Chinese businesses, it was only a matter of time before they looked elsewhere to grow their business, as relationships between the U.S. and China are shaky at best. Now Saudi Arabia has become an important destination to grow these brands, but on the other side, Saudi Arabia's relationships with the U.S. is also at a low point, and King Salman's meeting with Xi Jinping solidifies the signal that was already being sent that Saudi Arabia is inching away from the U.S. This is becoming more and more apparent over the disagreements between the two countries over energy policies, security guarantees, and human rights issues. The U.S. isn't making inflammatory comments about the visit, but the coordinator for strategic communications of U.S. National Security Council, John Kirby, did say that, quote, "We're mindful of the influence that China is trying to grow around the world." Saudi Arabia's energy minister said that the relationship between the two countries is witnessing an epoch-making milestone as he vowed that the kingdom will remain China's credible and reliable partner when it comes to oil production. Saudi Arabia isn't the only country warming up to China and even Russia, as the OPEC Plus decision to cut down on oil production amid rising demands from the West and especially the U.S. was a joint decision between the kingdom and Russia as the leaders of the major oil exporting organization. While Saudi Arabia sees the U.S. as its top security partner, the recent shakeup in their relationships, especially as a result of that very same OPEC Plus decision, has prompted the oil-rich kingdom to diversify on its partners list. It has shown that it does not want to hurt its relationship with Russia, as they have significant shared interests as leaders of the most influential crude oil exporting organization, and now it is showing that it is not shying away from cozying up to the U.S.'s trade war rival, China. As the use of Chinese yuan in the China-Saudi oil settlements is becoming increasingly more likely, especially during President Xi's visit to the kingdom, there is also the possibility of Saudi Arabia joining BRICS, as interest has been shown by the kingdom to join the trade-centered organization that also includes Russia as a member state. If, in fact, Saudi Arabia agrees to receive the Chinese yuan in exchange for its oil, that will be considered a massive blow to the falling hegemony of the U.S. dollar in world trade, and especially in oil. This de-dollarization effort has been accelerating, and the first major instance of it happened as Western sanctions first started pouring in on Russia to limit its trade potential. What ended up happening was that as China's oil imports from Russia went up, state-owned oil enterprises increasingly used the Chinese yuan as payments. While all European Union member states are one way or another forced to cooperate with the U.S. in sanctioning Russia, even if at an extremely high cost, the rest of the world is seeing less and less of an obligation to bend down to the will of the once hegemonic superpower as they see the prospect of a multipolar world more and more plausible and desirable.
a group of Australian lawmakers arrived in Taiwan despite warnings from Beijing over the visit at a time of rising tensions over the self-ruled island.
There's a group of bipartisan members of the parliament from Australia currently visiting Taiwan. They are already here. We appreciate that the Australian parliament is very friendly to Taiwan.
Taipei's foreign ministry stated that the members of the delegation will meet the territory's president and other officials during their five-day visit. The ministry added the meetings will focus on a wide array of issues of mutual interest. The Chinese foreign ministry expressed opposition to the trip, calling on Canberra to respect the One China principle.
Taiwan is an inalienable part of Chinese territory. The One China policy is a recognized norm of international relations, and it is also the prerequisite and political basis for China to develop friendly relations with other countries. The Australian side should earnestly abide by the One China policy, stop any form of official exchanges with the Taiwan region.
Under the One China policy, Beijing considers Taiwan a breakaway province that should be reunited with the mainland. The spokesperson also warned Australia against official exchanges with Taiwan, calling on Canberra to stop sending wrong signals to separatist forces in Taiwan. The visit to Taiwan comes as Australia's recently elected Labour government has moved to repair its strained diplomatic relations with China. Last month, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese met China's President Xi Jinping at the G20 summit in Bali, Indonesia. But the parliamentary trip to Taiwan would cast a shadow on attempts to build ties between Beijing and Canberra. Albanese sought to play down the mission's significance after it was first reported. He insisted the visit was separate from government business, saying there have been backbench visits to Taiwan for a long time. Australia had long maintained it didn't have to choose between China and the U.S., but in recent years, its attitude toward Beijing has revealed where it stands in the world. Signing the AUKUS Security Pact with the U.S. and U.K. and rotational presence of American forces in Australia are a testament to Canberra taking the side of the U.S. over China. The Pentagon has announced that the United States will increase the rotational presence of its forces in Australia.
Today, we agreed to deepen our defense cooperation in several important ways, including enhancing our force posture cooperation. And based upon today's talks, we will increase rotational presence of U.S. forces in Australia. That includes rotations of bomber task forces, fighters, and future rotations of U.S. Navy and U.S. Army capabilities.
The United States and Australia agreed to deepen their military ties, citing shared concerns over China's actions around Taiwan.
What we want is a region that is stable, prosperous, and respectful of sovereignty. And as we've made clear many times, U.S. engagement in the Indo-Pacific makes an indispensable contribution to such a region.
The two allies made the announcement following annual high-level talks between the top U.S. and Australian defense and diplomatic officials. The two countries have also agreed to invite Japan to boost its military cooperation. Washington sees Canberra as a vital partner in its effort to push back against China in the Indo-Pacific, and analysts say Australia could have a crucial logistical role to play in the defense of Taiwan against any move by Beijing. Australia's Northern Territory is already host to frequent military collaborations with the United States. Thousands of U.S. Marines rotate through the territory annually for training and joint exercises, started under former President Barack Obama. The United States is also planning to deploy up to 6 nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to an airbase in northern Australia, amid heightened tensions with China. Canberra has moved to bolster relations in the Pacific amid growing Chinese influence, including a security pact between China and Solomon Islands in April. In September, the United States, United Kingdom, and Australia marked the one-year anniversary of the AUKUS Security Pact. They then announced that they have made significant progress towards Australia acquiring nuclear-powered submarines.
Israeli forces have shot dead three Palestinians during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in northern West Bank. According to eyewitness accounts, a large number of Israeli military forces stormed the camp on Thursday morning. The attack triggered violent confrontations with local residents, during which Palestinians were killed. The victims were identified by Palestinian media as Tariq al-Damj, Siddiqui Zakarne, and Atta Shibli. According to reports, before the confrontation broke out, Israeli snipers were positioned on the rooftops of buildings overlooking the camp. At least 10 people have also been injured there. Israeli forces also fired directly at an ambulance during the raid, and its medical staff reportedly survived death. Israeli forces have recently been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus. New groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed there. The latest figures bring up the number of Palestinians killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of the year to 216. At least 164 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank. Scores of Palestinians have also been killed in Israeli raids in the Gaza Strip.
Simply saying this, Israeli establishment, the military, the security apparatus, and the settlers have clear orders to kill. They kill Palestinians even in cases of suspicions. They are always quick to pull the trigger. Recently, almost all raids to the West Bank areas leave Palestinians either killed or injured, and none of the soldiers have been investigated to any of the crimes.
According to the United Nations, the number of Palestinians killed by Israel in the occupied West Bank this year is the highest in 16 years. Rights organizations say that Israel is conducting a shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians.
Their main program is ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And the second is to suppress any form of resistance of Palestinian people and to enhance settlements everywhere. So practically, Israel has all the interest in enhancing the oppression against Palestinians. And we've seen even certain escalation during election time because Israeli parties were using Palestinian blood to feed their election purposes.
The rising violence against Palestinians comes against the backdrop of Israel's defiance to be held accountable for its crimes. The Qatar state-funded broadcaster Al Jazeera has filed a lawsuit at the International Criminal Court, the ICC, over the killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Al Jazeera says it has new evidence showing that she was killed by Israeli forces.
Many have called for an investigation. Shireen's family who are here today have made their own request. The Palestinian Authority has provided a comprehensive body of evidence, and yet there's been complete silence from the Office of the Prosecutor on this case, on cases across the board, in fact, in the Palestine situation.
The veteran journalist was shot in the head, killed on May 11 while she was covering their raid in the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. At the time of her killing, the 51-year-old journalist was wearing easily recognizable press attire. Al Jazeera now says its legal team has conducted a full and detailed investigation into the case and has unearthed new evidence based on several eyewitness accounts and video footage that clearly shows that Abu Akleh and her colleagues were directly fired in a deliberate killing by Israeli forces.
While there is overwhelming evidence from multiple eyewitnesses, over a dozen of investigations by reputable news outlets and human rights organizations and the United Nations, that Shireen was targeted and killed by an Israeli soldier, my family still doesn't know who the person is that shot that deadly bullet and who was involved in the chain of command that allowed them to kill my aunt.
It says the claim by Israeli authorities that the Palestinian journalist was killed by mistake in an exchange of fire is, quote, completely unfounded. Multiple investigations by independent organizations and media outlets have already concluded that Abu Akleh was deliberately shot by Israeli forces.
This was a proposal that was floated with only in recent hours, only today, by Al Jazeera. So I don't know that it has been a topic of discussion. I don't know that it would be a topic of discussion unless we had representations from the ICC that they were going to take an opinion one way or another.
Well, I mean, she was an American citizen.
Of course.
So it's not like you have no interest in it
at all.
But you oppose it.
We oppose it in this case for the reasons that
The Israeli military, following a long denial, finally admitted in September that Abu Akleh might have accidentally been killed by Israeli fire directed towards suspects identified as armed Palestinian gunmen. The United States has said it's investigating the case, but has refused to publicly condemn Israel for the killing.
Tehran has slammed Washington's move to push a draft resolution aimed to remove Iran from the UN's Commission on the Status of Women. Iran's foreign ministry says any misuse of the internal developments in Iran to exert political pressure on the country is condemned and unacceptable. Iran has just started a four-year term on the body after a recent voting session by the UN Economic and Social Council. Tehran has repeatedly warned that some Western countries are exploiting human rights for their own political ends. In recent weeks, rioters went on the rampage across the country, brutally attacking security officers and causing massive damage to public property as Western powers, especially the United States, provided support. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the riots. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said that the U.S. and certain European countries are behind the political and illegal draft resolution and that they are seeking to exert pressure on independent countries to pass it. He said the U.S. move is an action against the free vote of countries in international organizations and structures and questions the legality of such mechanisms in international bodies. He added, there are member countries of the UN Security Council or the Human Rights Council and Human Rights Assemblies that committed countless crimes against governments and independent nations throughout their history and now use human rights tools to exert pressure. Iran has lashed out at Western officials for cheering rioters in independent states while suppressing peaceful protesters in their own countries. Iran's foreign ministry says countries that have coups, conspiracies, interventions and devastating wars with millions of deaths in their history are now pretending to be defenders of human rights in other countries. The best example would be Western countries' hypocritical behavior vis-a-vis protests in Iran and their own states. Western officials say the protests in Britain, Germany, France, Canada, and Australia are bad and deserve severe confrontation, but riots in their targeted countries are good and deserve support. The riots in Iran began after the death of a young woman named Mahsa Amini in September. She collapsed at a police station in Tehran and later died at a hospital. Since then, the issue of women's rights suddenly caught the imagination of the world. The self-proclaimed human rights champions in the West who turn a blind eye to gross human rights abuses in the US and Europe are accusing Iranian authorities of killing the woman, even though all evidence, including the forensic report, scoffs at those claims. The Islamic Republic has strongly censured several countries for provoking riots in the country through their spy agencies and propaganda apparatus. London, in particular, hosts several anti-Iranian networks, including Iran International, Manoto, and BBC Persian. The U.S. is pushing for the removal of Iran from the UN Commission on the Status of Women following trumped-up claims by foreign media that attributed the killing of women to the Iranian government during the recent unrest in the country. They claim that they are acting in defense of women's rights, but they are in fact violating those rights and preventing women from raising their issues through pushing for the removal of Iran from the UN Commission. The 54-member UN Economic and Social Council is expected to vote on December 14th whether to oust Iran from the commission or not.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests,
with the radiance of silver-colored sand. In the midst of proud mountains, closer,